Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod, here to talk about MSU's final home game on senior night with a win over the Northwestern Wildcats, 53-49. Before we begin, a reminder once again to keep writing reviews. I know you guys have done a lot of them recently, so I really appreciate that. It makes a huge difference. Sometimes, like on Spotify, you can't leave a written review, so five-star review is super helpful and will help other Spartan fans move over to the show and able to find it. So if you're someone who enjoys a good jump shot or offense, I would not recommend watching a replay of the game. Just go ahead and skip it. But it was an emotional game because it was obviously senior night. And my impression was that MSU came out sort of tight and was unable to get anything going offensively in the first half, and certainly shooting the entire game. They only had about, I think, 7 points through the first 13 minutes or so, the first half. And the only saving grace was that Northwestern only had 15. So they weren't out of the game. A late push in the first half behind couple of Troy Holloman's three-pointers, which would be the only ones Michigan State would get the entire game. Close the gap a little, and the Cats got a three by Langborg at the end of the half to go up 25-20. But Michigan State surged out of the second half, tied and went ahead, and were kind of ahead or tied most of the second half, or at least within 2 points, and looked like they're about ready to pull away when they're up six, and then just a few untimely turnovers, inability to hit any open threes. I mean, wide open from everybody. Which really served as an Achilles heel for the offense and kept the Wildcats in the game. The one big advantage for the Spartans, however, was that the offensive boards were fantastic, where they pulled down 19, allowing them a chance to make up for their abysmal shooting. Although you could also say the reason they had an opportunity for 19 offensive rebounds is because they had abysmal shooting. Plenty of opportunities. So overall, an ugly win, but a win that they badly needed, which should put them safely in the tournament. Now they're sort of playing for safety and seeding, at least, you know, so they don't sweat so much or in the play-in game. Next up is closing the season in Bloomington on Sunday and then off to Minneapolis for the Big Ten tourney on what will be Thursday, since they get just a one-game bye.
Yeah, this was, in terms of a score and the way it was played, this was a throwback to, in some ways, to the pre-shot clock era. I can remember
four corners.
I can remember Michigan State, you know, over the years, I'm talking the 70s and the 80s, playing in games like this in the Big Ten. You know, 53-49 was not an uncommon score line. You would see that from time to time. It also felt a lot like early Tom Izzo teams, where they just couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. But they want right. it. They want it with rebounding, and with toughness and physicality. One thing mm-hmm. I was really glad to see is that Michigan State, I think we'll return to this in the keys. I think it was one of our keys, but the Michigan State. If you think back to that game in Evanston, where I remember at least feeling that the area Michigan State most profoundly lost that game. Is they didn't come close to matching Northwestern's energy or physicality.
For sure. Yep. Which was exemplified by Malik Hall in that game where he right. just was like totally missing. Yeah.
Right. And compare that to what he delivered in this one. And just in exactly. general, Michigan State dominated this game in that from that perspective. And that had a lot to do with finding a way to win. Look, it's one of the uglier wins you're ever going to see. But the point is fundamentally that it was a win. And, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. yeah, Northwestern was a bit shorthanded. That's true. But, you know, that's also part of the game. And the fact is that they found a way to compete in this game and have a great chance to win it. I will admit to, as that game was winding down, feeling not very confident about Michigan State for two reasons, because Michigan State has not often shown that ability to close out games. If you think about a lot of the games Michigan State's won this year, vast majority of them have been fairly easy.
Yes.
Like when they win by, you know, double digits. It's one of the reasons why they're standing in the various systems, the various metric systems.
Yeah, metrics, yeah, right.
Is so high. It's one reason, is that they win typically by large margins, and when they lose, they tend to lose tighter games. Very rarely have they just been run out of a building. I'd have to go back. I don't think they've ever been just completely run out of the building this year. One of the worst losses was that 14-point loss at Evanston, which is not great, but that's not getting run out of the building. I think the reason I lacked confidence was that Michigan State hasn't shown a great ability to do that. And then on the other side, you just always worry about Boo Booey making plays.
Yeah.
And thankfully, you know, Michigan State down the stretch really, really guarded him well. I mean, he got nothing easy. He got no easy looks. And that had a lot to do with sealing the victory. I will also say, probably my favorite moment, and something that indicates, it tells you something about the player, is Trey Holloman got that rebound. Michigan State's up two. They get him. I think it was Langborn. Was it a Langborn or a Barnheiser? Missed a three, and the rebound kicked out. And Trey happened to get his hand on it before it was. It must have been Langhorn, because Barnheiser's the one who fouled him. Trey got his on it, and then Barnheiser ran into him. Because he got his hand on it, that was enough to get the foul. So Michigan State's up two with, I think it was 9 seconds left. And it's a one and one still. They were one foul short of being in the double bonus. And Trey Holloman, as he's walking across half court to go take those shots, is waving his hands to the crowd to get him up. It just showed a really, and it wasn't, you know, you could say, oh, that's cocky. I don't think so. It showed a great deal of confidence for him. And then, you know, the important part is he steps to the line and he drains them all net.
Yeah. All net. That all was, four of those. He had 2 one-and-ones
right
in that at the end of the sequence. Yeah.
Yep. That was really, really big. And it shows you that he is a kid who can play with some real confidence. And that's going to be important, not just for the rest of the way this year, but for next year and beyond. It's good to know that you've got a guy who is very happy to be in those moments, feels comfortable in them. And that's what I got out of it, is that he showed no fear, didn't get tense, went up there, bang, bang, sealed the game. So that was very impressive. I thought Michigan State, we talked about it in the preview, Northwestern is a very good offensive team, although granted a little bit down right now with Berry out of the lineup, but still.
Langborg's back.
Still, though. Langborg's back. I don't know that he was 100%, but he hit some big shots. So he was close enough. They've still got a lot of firepower, and I think you're seeing Barnheiser and Martinelli, who I thought was really good tonight, that still means they've got four guys that are legit weapons out there offensively. So that's plenty. And I thought Michigan State did a pretty good job defensively. I mean, if you look at the numbers for Northwestern, they only shot 35% overall from the floor, only 33% from three. So that's 6 percentage points below their seasonal average from three, and I didn't look at what their overall shooting is, but it's well below what they typically do. Michigan State also forced 12 turnovers, and
that's a team that doesn't turn over the ball
six
over
of
often.
Them. Six of them came via the steal, so six of them were truly forced. And you're right, one of the best ball valuing teams in the nation, and Michigan State was able to do that. That was significant. So I think defensively, you know, Bowie is always the key guy for them. And you look at his numbers, and they weren't bad. He was 6-for-13 overall, 3-for-6 from three. But he didn't attempt a single free throw. That's huge. Huge. Mm-hmm. The only guy who really does get to the line with any regularity for them didn't get a free throw attempt in this game. He had one assist to four turnovers. That was big. Yep. I think that you can't say Michigan State, and we'll return to this in a second, you can't say Michigan State completely eliminated him by any means, but they limited him. You know, 15 points, that's, you know, four below his average. They didn't let him go crazy shooting the ball, especially in terms of attempts. And again, not putting him on the line, massive. So pretty good job there. Pretty good job defensively overall. The rebounding was on the offensive end was outstanding, except in one way. They couldn't turn it into points. They had 19 offensive rebounds, which I think is a season high.
It is a season high, yeah.
And what was the rebounding rate? It was near 50%, just a little bit
46%.
Under. Yeah.
46%.
Yeah. Well, they only turned it into 10 second chance points, which unfortunately...
less than Northwestern.
It was less than Northwestern, who had just about half. They had 10 offensive rebounds, and yet they had 14 second chance points to MSU's 10. So that was weird, right. But I still think, even keeping that in mind, I still think that was a huge part of the win for Michigan State because...
No question, it was a momentum killer.
Absolutely. It showed you, that it made clear the kind of physicality, the kind of energy that they were bringing to the table in this one. That's the thing. You could complain about the execution. I certainly will. The first half, I thought they looked like they were stuck in mud. Movement, yes. Ball movement, man movement was very poor. They also, once again, were missing at the rim a ton. And then you add to that, they just couldn't get a three to drop. And so it was just bad all the way around. Second half was better. But you can question the execution. In this game, you can't question the effort, the toughness, the physicality, the heart that they played with. That was on display throughout. And by the way, it's got a lot to do with why they were able to win a game where they struggled that much offensively. That's why.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think the best example of the intensity of that game and the way Michigan State was bringing it was that, I think it was the first half when Ryan Langbord got a rebound and Jackson Kohler was there, grabbed it, and it became a jump ball. But as Langbord was moving the ball over his head, he basically just grabbed... I mean, Kohler refused to let go of that ball and got flipped onto his back. I mean, that just showed you the intensity that Michigan State was playing with. And that was, I think that really showed you not only, and I guess that's another thing with Kohler I had a question with, because I was very surprised. He played a decent amount of minutes in the first half. I don't have the splits right in front of me this second. And it didn't look like he was going to play in the second half. I mean, he didn't start out in the second half. He didn't, but down the stretch of the end, he played almost the last 6 minutes. It was surprising, and then I'm watching him, and like he's actually doing a great job rotating over and walling off Bowie as he's trying to drive into lane and get something done. And I mean, there are a couple times when they were able to get the pass to the weak side, but for the most part, he was able to sort of defend. And I thought, you know, that's something that I expect Mahdi to do. I didn't expect Jackson to do that, but of course, the other end, Jackson probably at least something of a threat offensively, and that may be the reason he's out there versus Mahdi. I don't know. That was just my hunch.
It was very surprising to me for exactly the reason you suggested, but I was also surprised because at an earlier point in this game, Northwestern exploited him in ball screen defense. He didn't execute properly, and I can't remember whether it was, I think it was Martinelli, but it was one either he or Barnheiser. Just rolled and Jackson didn't get back to him. You know, Jackson, it's one thing that I think Booker has been doing a much better job of lately. Jackson struggles with it a little more. That's getting back to his man. If Jackson's coming on a hard or semi-hard hedge, he has trouble getting back to his man quickly. And he did have trouble in this game at times. So because of that, I'm right there with you. I was very surprised to see it. But you can't argue with the results. I mean, it was he didn't play the entirety of the stretch run because late in the game they went small ball. It was I think it was Malik and four guards basically. But you know, still they got through that period and didn't pay any kind of price, and it was surprising. But I thought he held up okay.
Yeah, I mean, I did not think he played great in the first half. So I thought, well, it wasn't surprising me that he wasn't coming back out. But then when he just kind of closed, I guess he was playing well enough. They thought, well, there's no point substituting him out. It's not like you're going to bring Booker in at that time, who did not look great. He definitely, Northwestern saw what he did against Purdue, and they didn't allow him to have those screens and those threes. And then he was pretty much unable to do anything else. He didn't get any rebounds. He played 10 minutes and didn't have a rebound. Just had one missed shot. He was almost like a, I guess he had a block, but, you know, not terrible effort, but not sort of what he had last time. And this is what you expect from freshmen. So,
right.
And Cooper was not great either, but okay. And then the fact that Northwestern had so much foul trouble, it really caused them fits as far, you know, with Hunger, who had two fouls within like 3 seconds, it felt like, in that first half. And then it just kind of threw the rotation out of whack. And Preston came in and he got some fouls, and they just said, oh, we're just going to go small, which they were still effective.
I think that's, now look, it clearly hurt them on the boards. But again, Michigan State didn't do a great job of converting those into points. But other than that, I thought it made for a challenging game in some ways for Michigan State, because I can't remember whether they were playing Preston against Booker in his first half stint. I don't recall. But regardless, he never got those looks that he was getting against Purdue, and frankly, that he's gotten against a lot of other people lately. He was not getting those looks. So this was a tougher game for him, and he doesn't, you know, at this point, he doesn't have counters yet. I mean, he tried to go on the blocks, and they just weren't able or willing to get it to him.
He never had good positioning I was watching him.
Yeah, and you know, he's not, even though I absolutely think he has it, I think it's one of the things that makes him potentially a special player. He's not yet ready to square somebody up, a big who's guarding him 20 feet from the rim, and just go past them. That's the that off the dribble. That's the next step of the evolution of his game, I think, hopefully for next year, is that you will see him do that. Kind of like, I've raised this comparison before, but somewhat like you see at times from someone like Dawson Garcia at Minnesota.
Or Coleman Hawkins, even.
Coleman Hawkins, another really good example. You're right. Where they, and I do, I honestly do believe there was evidence of it when he was in high school, that Book has a good handle and he's fluid. So I think he can actually do that. But right now, you know, whether he's been coached to not try that or he just doesn't feel comfortable enough with it, he's not gonna try to take anybody off the dribble 20 feet from the rim. So consequently, it made it a tougher go for him. And I thought, you know, there were times where Michigan State would have one of their fives guarding, you know, Barnheiser. Well, that's a tough guard.
That's a tough cover.
Five.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Northwestern, now again, you look at it, they scored 49 points. How effective could it have been? But I think that it did make for some challenging moments for Michigan State to try to, and they did try. There was a segment in that game where MSU went small with Hall and Carr together, which we've seen occasionally earlier in the season. I don't think we've seen it for a while. And they went with that, and it was okay. They weren't able to get a lot of momentum going really either way. But other than that, you know, Michigan State tended to stay big, and it was tough.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, too, you know, you mentioned that they didn't get anything going. Well, you could almost argue they couldn't get anything going the entire first half.
Well,
I mean, nothing worked.
Terrible.
They tried about every single combination of lineups out there, and just nothing worked for anybody until they had that little stretch with like, what, 4 minutes left or something.
Yeah.
Like I said, Holloman had a couple threes.
Yeah.
They got a couple points, yep. But it was tough sledding out there.
Well, you know, look, I go back to what I said earlier, that first half. Second half, the offensive struggles that they had, to a large extent, were what you had mentioned, missed wide open shots, perimeter shots. That was really it. The ball was moving far better. They were making a concerted effort to get the ball to the rim and having a lot of success in doing that via penetration or via getting the ball to Malik and letting him go to work. But the first half, the struggles were, in my opinion, were mostly because they just ran the offense. They didn't, guys weren't moving. They were, yeah. I continually, and I'm telling you, it's the first thing I'm going to be watching for next year, and I think we will see improvement in this with Jeremy Fears on the ball. There are a lot of times where Michigan State just takes way too long to get into its sets. It drives me crazy. It is not, I understand they want to get it right. They want to make sure everybody's on the same page. I understand all of that, but I am telling you, it is not, we've harped on this off and on all year. It is not to this particular team's advantage at all to play any way other than fast. They need, when that ball comes over half court, they need to be into the set immediately. This waiting 8 seconds, 10 seconds to start any real movement, to start any action, it's garbage. And it leads to segments or halves in the extreme sense, like we saw tonight, where they just, it's stagnant. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's not because the sets can't work. It's because you're waiting too long to get into them. You don't have time for counters or to reset, and you end up forcing up a bad shot. And that's what we saw with regularity in that first half. Very, very frustrating to watch. Again, second half wasn't perfect, but it was vastly better.
Yeah, even though they weren't hitting the shots, they were much better.
And they were hitting rhythm. They were hitting enough shots. You know, they shot.
Yeah, just not outside the arc. But
they shot
right.
43% on the half, and that's with an 0-for-8 from three. So they were actually inside the arc. They were 60%. So they figured that out, and a lot of that was, I think, there was really good ball movement, and then you also had guys with the right kind of mentality, you know. AJ decided to, you know, finish some plays. Tyson got aggressive on a night where the three wasn't falling for him. He still scores 19 points. Well, why did that happen? Because he got more aggressive in going to the rim, you know, and he took a lot of shots. He was 8 for 21, took him a bunch of shots to get there, but, you know, he made plays. Trey Holloman had those 2 threes in the first half, but as you mentioned, had those 4 free throws late. He had another bucket from the floor. He was part of that. So, and of course, Malik, as we said, was really, really good in that second half. So they did enough. I'm certainly not one to look a gift horse or a win in this case in the mouth. I'm very happy with the toughness and the fight that they showed. Less happy with the offensive execution at times, but, you know, the important thing was you get a win, and they got a win.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, I'm reasonably confident that they're in. I'd feel a hell of a lot better. I'd have no concerns if they take care of business on Sunday at IU. But
for sure,
you know, but I think they're probably in. And so that's huge. It's huge to give the seniors a good send-off. You know, you don't ever want to lose these games. And fortunately, Michigan State has, and just anecdotally as I think about it, they seem to have very rarely lost senior day. One that comes to mind was the 2012 game against Ohio State.
Yeah.
But no other ones, I'm sure there have been. I'm just, no other ones are coming back to me immediately. I just think about, it's usually a really joyous occasion. It stands to reason because Michigan State at home over the course of Tom Izzo's tenure has been very, very, very good. So you would expect to win most of those games, and that's the way it's been. It would have been very tough to roll into Bloomington off a loss. I can say that much.
Your fourth straight loss, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was one of those nights where it's like, look, shots are not falling. We got to find a way to gut it out and just win it. Whatever you got to do. And that's what they did.
Yeah, I think they did the things that they didn't do against James Madison at the beginning of the season, where they couldn't hit it, couldn't buy a shot either, right? It was exactly the same scenario where they hit 2 for 17 from three, right? Like, no matter how wide open they were, they couldn't hit them.
Ohio State, I mean, there have been a few games like that where you're right. It's there to be won if you make winning plays, and that can, you can do that even if shots aren't falling. And, you know, threes. You can find ways. You get yourself to the line. You can find a way to score at the rim. You know, Tyson hit a couple of big ones in the latter stages of that game. You know, you can make defensive plays. You can get an offensive rebound. There's a lot of things you can do to help salt away a win, even if jumpers aren't falling. And you're right. There have been too many times this year where Michigan State couldn't find a way to do that. So on a night where they did, I'm very pleased with that, and I can live with everything that went wrong.
The other things, I guess, just a brief note. I think Cohen Carr only played one turn in the first half, and I know they mentioned somewhere that he has been sort of given the direction to just go after the ball, and that's like this. That is his, and you see his. It's like ferocious how he goes after the. Now, they only gave him credit for one rebound, just one offensive rebound, but it was a fantastic where he's like almost diving out of bounds. I mean, an athletic play that very few people could make, and he threw it and they just managed to kind of corral it. I think AJ ended up getting that ball, but that was really impressive. He didn't end up playing the second half just because I think offensively he's limited, you know, still at this point, but you know, I was impressed with his new mentality, his new mindset.
And honestly, I don't know why it's taken until now for that directive to come, because I thought from the beginning he looked like a guy that should be able to impact the game on the offensive glass. I mean, he's strong and he's a phenomenal athlete. So what else do you need? But whatever, I agree with you. The last couple of games, you're seeing a different mentality with him, and that will be a good thing for Michigan State in time.
Yeah, and then the other one to mention is Akins, who had a rough game. I mean, he's 0 for 7 from the field, 0 for 4 from 3, had one offensive rebound, and then a turnover, a block in 24 minutes. I mean, he was pretty much missing. I mean, he played good defense,
He did.
But outside, I mean, you know, offensively, just a rough game. And I guess, you know, you could say, well, he didn't get rebounds because other people get rebounding the ball. And so I'll, you know, grant you that. That's possible. I wasn't.
He had
a rough game.
He was my pick. That didn't come to fruition, but
yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, but it was just, you know, look, the bottom line is with Jaden, unless you can get him some transition opportunities, it's kind of three or bust for him making a big. Every once in a while, he'll be able to hit a mid-range jumper. But and he tried a couple of those tonight that didn't go. But it's, you know, offensively with him, if he's able to contribute some threes, and most of the time he is, that tends to get him going, and you see one of those double digit games from him. When it's not going, it's tough. And Northwestern just wasn't giving up anything really in transition. I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, they did a good job.
Mm-hmm. Fast break points were 7-7, and listeners know I often take issue with the accuracy of what that gives you, but in this case, I think that reflects how the game felt.
They weren't even a secondary fast break points, too. I mean, they forced them to really set half-court offense.
Yeah, and so when that's not happening, it's hard for Jaden to get on track. He had one kind of semi-break that ended up in a blocked shot. Other than that, he didn't really get any chances. And, you know, Michigan State needs more. What helped them tonight is they got 12 points off the bench from Trey Holloman.
Yep.
So Trey's not always going to give you that much scoring production. He did in this one, and that was very, very big and very, very necessary.
Yeah. He's been sort of on the little bit of the struggle bus the last couple weeks, and so It's nice to see him have a nice breakout game at home where he sort of
He shot the ball well at Purdue also, though. So he's been coming out of it. But that was really a lifesaver today because they needed that third guy. You know, Malik and Tyson were kind of it. AJ was kind of a no-show offensively. Aikens literally was with zero. So they needed to find some points somewhere else, and Trey was that guy. And it was just enough.
Yeah. Fortunately, didn't need a lot of points in this game. It took 53. My son turned next to me probably about 4 minutes left. He's like, what do you think? Like first to 53 wins? I said, maybe.
Well,
and sure enough,
it was.
53 is exactly the right number.
They said it jokingly on the broadcast, but they were proven right. First to 50 wins and first to 50 won.
All right. Well, let's move on to the Brothers Jesse Gutters. It is spring. There's rain. There's rain last night. You got to have the gutters to take the water away from your house. And there's no better team than the Brothers Jesse Gutters. That's all they do. They specialize in it. So you would regret it if you didn't have them. At least come out and take a look at your house and get an estimate from them. They're going to give you a great price. They do great work. Very efficient. Just fantastic guys. And so highly recommend them. They're both on the Metro Detroit area and also the Metro Grand Rapids area. If you need to get a hold of them, you get 10% off if you mention Final Four. And you can get that at the support page at the Final Four is on theschedule.com/support. You can find the links to click for either the west side or east side of the state to get the brothers to come out and take care of things. So they sponsor the player that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter. And Daniel Richard Bowie was definitely, I think, was kept in the gutter this game, especially in the second half, as you mentioned before. Bowie did okay in the first half. He had 9 points. But the second half, he was limited to 6 points. 3 for 8 from the field, 0 for 2 from three, 2 turnovers, no assists in 20 minutes. And he was really bottled up. He had that, just in general, they did a great job of holding him down. And even in the first half, he didn't, although he had an assist, he also had 2 turnovers. He was 3 for 5, 3 for 4 from three. So he's good there with 9 points. But he didn't really control the game. He didn't, like he, in Evanston, he had 10 assists, I think, in like a, 1 or 2 turnovers. He really controlled that game, and he was in charge. It wasn't that way this time, so they did a fantastic job of I think basically keeping in the gutter. And you know, you're not going to keep him at like 3 points, but they limited his effectiveness.
Yeah, I talked about this earlier. It's hard for me to evaluate because you know he scored 15, which is not his average. It's not terrible. He shot pretty efficiently. You know, nearly 50% overall, right on 50% from three. But there's two things. One is what you mentioned, the lack of assists. One assist for a guy who's been averaging about 5. That says something. 4 turnovers. This is a guy who's not averaging anywhere near that many. And no. Michigan State did it. And they were, I'll give you an example. You know, sometimes we look at the non-steal turnovers and say, well, those are unforced errors. But, you know, Bowie had a play fairly late in that game where, you know, we were talking about that segment, Jackson Kohler was on the floor, where he was trying to penetrate. He got doubled up. It was Jackson and maybe AJ. I can't remember who the other player was.
One of the guards, yeah.
But I remember Jackson stayed long, and they didn't foul him, and he ended up, you know, going up with the shot, released the ball, caught it. Well, that's a walk. He wanted to argue that it shouldn't have been, but it absolutely was properly called. That was forced. That was a forced turnover by virtue of the way Michigan State defended him. And I think when we, you know, we talked about it at the outset, in a tight game in the last like 3 minutes, you are conditioned, especially Michigan State fans, because he's been doing this to Michigan State basically since he got it to Evanston. But
yeah,
this year, the entire league, really, you're just conditioned to expecting Boo Booey to make big plays when it matters. And Michigan State didn't let him get one easy look down the stretch. And, you know, that was probably the difference between winning or losing. So if you want to look at those two factors, the lack of assists, the relatively high turnover numbers, and then how they played him at winning time, you know, you could make an argument that he was kept in the gutter. I'm not comfortable with saying that completely, but they did a nice job on him, especially when it mattered most.
Yeah. Well, let's just say we kept him in the downspout. You know, not quite all the way in the gutter. Yeah. So the only thing I'd add is, I think he's credited with 4 turnovers. I think Hunger was actually responsible for a couple of those where his drip with his handoffs were bad and they kept getting picked. And I think they credited it to Boot because Hunger was only credited with 1 turnover and he had at least 3 of those in the game where he just kind of gave the ball away.
One other thing to reiterate about Bowie though was really important in the kept him in the gutter column. And I mentioned this before, 0 free throw attempts.
Yes.
This is a guy who averages almost close to 5 a game, I think, 4.5. 0. That's big. In a game this tight, if he gets his average, we might be talking about overtime. You know?
Yeah.
So big, big deal that Michigan State was able to contain him. And then truthfully, for him, 13 shots from the floor is not a ton. So
no, Michigan's, he's usually a lot bigger volume than that.
And you know that they were coming into this game expecting that they were going to need a lot of scoring from him. You know, that would be the way you would expect it to go. And Michigan State just didn't let him get a ton of opportunities, didn't bail him out by fouling him. That's a huge deal. And it wasn't just one guy. It was truly a team effort because there were segments, I think all 4 of the guards took their turn on him as a primary defender. And then with the way MSU switch, you know, everybody got their shot regardless, even if they weren't the primary defender. There was one possession Malik Hall had him.
I was going to say, Malik was on him once at least late too. Yeah.
Yeah. So hats off to Michigan State defensively. I think they did about as well with Boo Booey as you could expect.
And I want to also add one last thing that a big hats off or whatever to the Izzone when Bowie had that 3 that he airballed.
Yeah.
And then it went straight to the under whatever timeout to chant airball. It was so fun. I've never seen that before where they chanted airball all through the entire break. Because usually there are things that go on, you know, they have some other thing like, you know, smile cam or whatever. Didn't matter. People were chanting airball. And then after it went about a minute and a half, then everybody was, I mean, it was really pretty phenomenal.
Robbie Hummel and trying to remember the broadcast, it was Robbie Hummel, I believe, said it was the most intense airball chant he'd seen all year.
I've never seen that. And the stats guy who sits right next to the broadcasters, and I don't know if he's actually with the network, but he was like applauding the crowd. He turned around and was applauding the crowd as they're coming out of commercial. Yeah. So it was pretty impressive. Great job by the Izzone to really maintain that intensity for a game that, you know, was pretty ugly, but to stay in it like that, it was, you know, who knows, that may have been the difference in the game in some ways too. All right. So then we're going to go to our Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. They sponsor the Michigan State player that cleans the glass best. If you need your glass cleaned, and guess what? It's that time. We're getting emerging from winter. It turns out there's actually a sun up there. Who knew? Behind those clouds. And so now I was sitting in our family room and my wife was looking at me and she was squinting. Like, that's been a long time since that's happened. So the sun is emerging. Spring is here. But you also want to make sure you get that sun gets through your windows. So you got to make sure they're clean. So if you need someone to clean your windows, maybe your screens, maybe both, maybe the side of your house, maybe your business, whatever it is, the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids should be your first call. You can get a 15% off your estimate if you mention Rebound. You can find the link to get an estimate at our support page at tffinots.com/support. There you can have them come out. And again, they'll do work whenever to the weather, whatever the time of the year, they'll take care of it. And they do a fantastic work. They took care of our house and they are great. So you were ahead 6-5.5. Let's see. You had Jaden Akins and what did he have? He had one rebound.
Yeah.
And let's see. I had Malik Hall. How did he do? I got to look at the stats here. I think he had 17. So I think I get the point there.
Yeah.
I almost think I should get 2 points for that. I mean, that's 17.
We'll just get the point. Fortunately for me, it doesn't work that way.
Since we set the rules,
Malik has obviously.
Holy cow. What an effort in this game.
And the back half of this season as their best rebounder. But yeah, this was beyond anything that we've seen. I've got to believe that's a season high for any MSU player Has to be.
I'm sure it's got to be his. It's got to be his career high. I would think. I guess I don't know.
I would think so. And seven.
I mean, especially seven offensive rebounds. That's crazy.
I mean, 10 defensive by itself would be a great game. That would be a great effort. But to add seven offensive rebounds, wow. So, yeah, hats off to him. He just really, really delivered. And, you know, it was obviously he stands out in a huge way for his rebounding. And, you know, but he wasn't alone. If you look at it, Tyson Walker, 5 rebounds. Another good rebounding game for him. AJ had 4. Mahdi had 4 in just 9 minutes. Trey Holloman had 4.
Especially the big tap out at the very end of the game. I mean, the game is pretty much over, but he tapped out at the end of the game.
Jackson Kohler and Carson Cooper, 3 each. So, and they had 4 team rebounds. So Michigan State, you know, we'll return to it in a second, but we talked about the need for a gang rebounding mentality to carry over from what they did against Purdue. And boy, did we see that.
Well, all right. So then let's go to the keys of the game brought to you by Edge Printing. It's just a reminder that we're almost at the end of our Big Ten Beat Rod contest with the Big Ten standings. You can check out where you are. Now, they're not actually in order. So those are just the picks. You have to figure out, calculate yourself, because guess what? I'm not going to bother doing this until the whole season's over, because I think going into this last game, I think, you know, Indiana could have ended up anywhere between 5th and 13th, depending on the results of the rest of the season, which is crazy.
Right.
But
right.
Again, that just kind of shows you the way the Big Ten is.
They just won. So I think
they beat Minnesota.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be 13th.
Out of that. But yeah, they're in position where they could tie some teams, you know, and finish, in the first, in the upper half.
Sure. Well, the tiebreakers is crazy.
They're 9-10 right now, so they're a game back of Michigan State and Iowa, I believe, are tied at 10-9. So yeah, there's still lots of shifts are possible. I haven't looked at all the scenarios, but I think it is possible for Michigan State to still get a double bye, I think.
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so.
I say that is, I don't know how the tiebreaker works with Northwestern.
Yeah, I think the tiebreakers are what knock them out. I think if I saw, I think one of the Green and White Dr. Green and White or something, I think he had the percentage.
Okay.
Now, I say that it's possible there's like a 1% or 2% chance. I guess I don't know what scenario that was that allowed them to. Now, obviously, they have to win next week.
I know this much. Northwestern sits in fourth right now. So Michigan State's a game back of them. So Northwestern would have to lose. Michigan State would have to win just to start it. The fact that Michigan State won this game means there's no advantage in the head-to-head. They split the season series. So I didn't go far enough to know what other tiebreaker scenarios there are.
I don't know what they are.
Either way, it's a tight race, and there's a whole bunch of teams between third and, say, eighth right now that – you could have that order completely jumbled come Sunday evening.
Yeah. So the point is, I'm not going to figure that out. So, you know, if you want to figure it out, go for it. You can figure it out and look at that page to know where you lie as it stands now. But the winner, of course, wins Nudge Printing gift cards. So you can get some great apparel, because if you need Spartan apparel, high quality stuff, no better place to go than Nudge Printing. They ship everything, super fast. I mean, it's all great, high quality stuff. I have a ton of it. We all three of us wore it tonight. So I had my son and his friend came with us. So it was kind of sad because it was our last ice cream sandwich. It's my son's last one now before he heads to college. And so he was a little bit sad, but at least we went out with a win. So anyway, let's begin with the 5 keys of the game brought to you by Edge Printing. And once again, also at Final Four, mentioned Final Four. The coupon code, when you go to Edge Printing, get 20% off your order. All right. So the first key of the game was defend the arc. You know, Northwestern shot 20% for the second half. The first half, they shot for the game 33% from three.
Yeah.
Definitely better in the second half of limiting their quality attempts. So I don't know. I guess they did okay. It was definitely below their average.
Yeah, I would say okay is a good word. A little higher, you know, we talked about this in the pregame. I did feel as if this was a team that partly because of what's happened to their roster in recent weeks, losing a couple starters, that there was a chance to sell out and take the three away, maybe a little more than Michigan State did. They still managed to get 20 attempts. But,
yeah,
you know, you hold them, whatever it was, 6 percentage points below their seasonal average. That's pretty good. I did think Michigan State, even that, God, that last three that Langborg hit to turn a four-point game into a one-point game,
yeah,
it was
an easy look.
Terribly defended. I mean, Trey wasn't right there with him. He was coming off a pick, and Langborn obviously was ready to shoot as soon as he came off it. So he got that little bit of daylight, but Trey did give a decent contest. And so you got to give Northwestern credit for that one. But by and large, I thought Michigan State was at least okay here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say there were very few, like, if you look at the quality of three-point looks from Michigan State versus Northwestern, I mean, Michigan State's looks were way better. Now, they didn't, you know, they
did nothing.
I think they both attempted about the same amount, almost the same amount, but
yeah.
Either way, Northwestern made tougher shots, and Michigan State missed easier shots, so, yeah, this is one of those days. So, fortunately, it didn't end up affecting the end. All right, so the second key to the game was the boards. This is clearly a huge win for Michigan State, although, as you point out, from points off, you know, second chance points, it was advantage Northwestern, actually, strangely,
very
despite
weird.
Having a lot less rebounds. But Northwestern didn't do terrible on the boards. They did. I mean, it seemed like they always got something when they got one. If not even a basket, then they get a foul or something. So they had 30% offensive rebounding rate, which is okay. But Michigan State, you know, punishing 46%. I mean, they just were destroying them on the boards. So that was definitely a win for Michigan State in that sense. And if, you know, if we see that kind of way of attacking teams, if they're not great rebounding teams, which there are plenty that aren't, this team can do a lot more, especially if you start, imagine you hit three more of those threes, which is not crazy. I mean, even four, and suddenly this is not even a close game.
Right. Yeah. I think that all in all, it's hard to say Michigan State didn't do the job when, they have a 16% advantage in rebounding percentage in this game. So I've got to say, yes, maybe it wasn't quite as good as I would have liked to have seen in terms of keeping Northwestern off its own offensive glass, but the job that MSU did on the offensive boards was just phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the only thing you'd say is the problem is they had so many opportunities to get offensive rebounds because they were missing so many shots.
Yeah. But part of that was, you know, again, offensive rebounding oftentimes, and it was the case in this game, can lead to really good jump shot looks from three or otherwise, but especially from three. And Michigan State had a bunch of those. They just didn't hit them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I can't come down. Yes, the second chance points certainly matters, but Michigan's, in terms of just analyzing the job on the boards, Michigan State did it extremely well. They just didn't turn it into as much production as you would like.
Right. All right, so the third key of the game is guard play. You know, first half, not good. I mean, defensively, I thought the guards were good for the most part. Offensively, you know, not great. And then obviously at the second half, they picked it up a little bit.
Yeah. They didn't turn the ball over. And Northwestern is a team that will turn you over some. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not quite as oriented in that direction as they were a year ago, but they're still good. And for Michigan State to only finish with, what was it, 8 turnovers, points off turnovers, MSU won that battle 11-9, so maybe not as decisively as you would have hoped, but still good. That was solid, the way Michigan State valued the ball. I thought the way they defended was largely outstanding, so that was good. We mentioned, ironically, other than Aikens, the other three guys rebounded well. They had good guard rebounding this game, no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the shooting. I mean, I could, you know, Tyson had a tough night, but he kept going because they needed him to score. And so I can't bag on him. He contributed. We talked about Trey was really good as well. Then you got Jaden Aikens with an 0 for and you have A.J. Hogarth score 6 points, all of which came in the second half. That was big. They needed that. But I just, I don't know what to say. Because in that first half, once again, he's missing point-blank opportunities at the rim.
Yes.
I don't have an answer for it.
No. But if there's anything you could say about AJ, is everybody's missing point blank. I mean, everybody's missing these shots in the first half. So he was no different. I do think that first half aside, which, you know, it's easy to kind of throw away the first half. I thought AJ played with a good intensity, and defensively he was good the whole game.
Yep.
And he definitely got some really good steals late and was really impacting the game on the defensive end really well. And so although he didn't have a huge offensive output, he had 6 points, but we've said he doesn't need to have, I mean, a great game from AJ is not like 13, 14 points. I mean, obviously you want him to convert a couple of those,
but
a couple free throws and a couple layups, but it still was a very good game from him, I thought, in general.
Well,
I can't
go there because if people want to talk about, well, it's the other four guys too. Sure, it is. But look, when you take the point guard role, that's essentially a quarterback of the team, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that first half offense, a lot of that's him. You know, it's on him to get in. And what I talked about a while ago, when I see them come over half court and spend 8 seconds, 9 seconds, 10 seconds before they get into a set, that's on your point guard. If guys aren't moving, the point guard's job is to get them moving, get them set. So you want to let them off the hook, fine. That's your business. I'm not saying you. I mean listeners.
No, I know.
MSU fans,
me too,
whoever. But,
yeah.
But I can't because I know what the job requires. And I do not think Tom Izzo is saying, hey, AJ, slow it down. Don't rush it getting into these sets. It's his job. So he did some very good things. He rebounded. He defended. That was all really important. 6 points in the second half. He gave them something at least. Okay.
Yeah.
But, man, that first half was just a complete ghost performance. He was there in name only. Offensive.
And not specifically to him, but I feel like the end of the first half, you know, we say always use it or lose it timeout. How often do they actually score on that set, whatever the play is? I feel like it's almost never this year.
Well,
am I crazy for thinking that? But I just don't think they ever are able to execute that properly.
Their execution it's been spotty all year long. I'd have to look at it. They executed against Purdue.
Although that was kind of like an individual effort.
Whether there was a timeout before that or not, but it hasn't been great.
Yeah.
Right. That tracks.
All right. So fourth key to the game was pace. Well, clearly this pace was in Northwestern's advantage, which we expected that they're going to prevent transition. They did a great, fantastic job of preventing really anything going for Michigan State outside of a couple steals where they were able to break down the court, but that was about it.
They did, but again, when Trey Holloman was running the point, I felt Michigan State was a little more aggressive and a little more tuned up to try to push it. That didn't result in much in the way of production, but they were at least forcing Northwestern to do it. And this has been a problem for a lot of this year. AJ just does not push. One of the reasons why the Jeremy Fears injury was, I think, in retrospect, such a big deal. And I'm not saying it turned them from what they are, would have turned them from what they are into title contenders, but they would have been better off in a lot of ways. And one way is Jeremy Fears already, like 10 games or whatever it was that he played into his career before he got injured, he showed an insistence in pushing the basketball that we just do not have this year from AJ. It just doesn't exist. And so, again, as a team, Michigan State got very little done trying to play fast. I put at least some of that on number 11.
And the fifth and final key of the game was energy. And I think, we mentioned that there was a clear difference in energy in Evanston. And there's a clear, I think Northwestern came and played pretty hard this game too, but
they did.
Michigan State matched it and maybe had, you know, had as much. And I think they just played tight to start the game, and whether it's a senior night thing or what, they just seemed out of sorts, but they at least played hard, and eventually it paid off at the very, very end of the game.
Where this matters is the fact that despite how poorly Michigan State was executing on offense, Northwestern was not able to pull away. They were saying on the broadcast at one point, like, you know, it felt like Northwestern should have been able to be up like 12, 14 rather than 5. And that's right. That's accurate. When Michigan State is stuck on 7 points, whatever it was, 13 minutes into the game, you would worry that you were down 15 or more by that point. And they weren't. The biggest lead Northwestern ever had was 8, and that didn't last for long. And that's because Michigan State played with energy, effort, and some physicality, and they executed the defensive game plan. So Northwestern was never really able to get into an offensive rhythm. I talked about it after that Iowa debacle. We said, you know, did it ever look at any point in that game like Iowa was made uncomfortable running their offense? And the answer for me was clearly no. Mm-hmm. This game, I didn't think that was the case. I think Northwestern was made to feel uncomfortable. And let's keep in mind, for as much as I can complain about Michigan State not getting much more done against a bad defensive team, Northwestern is a very good offensive team. And Michigan State really limited them. So hats off to the defense.
All right. And so then to finish things off, we're going to go to our listener question of the show, which is brought to you by Sean McCown. Sean sent us a question. This is brought to you by Element Electrolyte Drink. If you want to get a free variety pack, you can do that if you just go to our support page. Click on that with whatever purchase, even another variety pack, you can get one to try it out. They are no calorie electrolyte solution. You just put in your water, different flavors. Fantastic stuff I use all the time, so highly recommend the stuff. All right, so Sean writes, my sense is that the MSU online fan base, which is always a problem if you start paying too much attention to the online fan base, but the online fan base lost its collective mind after the loss to Syracuse in the NCAA tournament. Fans went berserk over Izzo's playing of Ben Carter instead of Jaren Jackson and completely neglected the fact that we missed our last 14 shots over the last 5 minutes of the game. Something similar is happening this year with Xavier Booker, who has a lot of potential but is still very raw and who fans have become obsessed with while paying no attention to the notable deficiencies with the performance of the backcourt. My question, did that Syracuse game ruin the MSU fan base?
Well, no, because if you think that's the first time that a large segment of people had stupid opinions, no. I can cite lots of them over the years if you want. I'd rather not go through it, but believe me, they're there. No, I just think it's, look, the Booker thing became easy because you have this combination of a number of different factors. You have where he was ranked. You then have the fact that unusually he was not playing very much, sometimes not at all.
Mm-hmm.
You have Michigan State's entire post group outside of Malik Hall not really delivering very much to get excited about. And I'll even say that, having been a defender of some of those guys, and I do think that on occasion they did contribute things. You know, there was a point in time that we were in our cleaning the glass segment. Mahdi was the default pick, right?
Yeah,
in, game out. So he was rebounding very well. I think there have been points that he and Cooper have defended well, but neither one of them has excelled in either one of those areas enough to say, well, that's why they should be getting the majority of the minutes, no question, because they're dominating in those areas. That hasn't happened. So you factor that in, and then you have this period where Booker clearly has improved. Now, you have someone like Jim Comperoni who says to him, based on what he's seen in practice, Xavier Booker has improved in season as much as any player he's ever seen at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting thought, because even now, we're still not at a point where you look at Xavier Booker and say, well, pencil him in for 10-7. That's just not where it's at, you know? So, but it's encouraging because I think if that slope of improvement continues with the package that he's got in terms of his physical attributes and some of his skills, his ball skills in particular, I think you're talking about a guy who's going to be a special player at some point. But I think all of those things, along with the losing, contributed to this. It was an easy thing to obsess about. I have no problem with someone believing that Xavier Booker deserved more minutes lately. I think there's no question early on he wasn't ready for it. He never showed that he was. Lately, right. You could argue it. You could, you know, if you want to argue that he should have played a little more against Purdue, okay, maybe. I don't think you had that argument really tonight, but okay, maybe if someone wants to say he should have gotten one more turn, I wouldn't argue with it. But I have no problem saying that. But where I have a problem is way too many people have it, and obsession is a really good word for it, in my view. And it's at the top of their talking point list after every game, mostly after the losses, especially after the losses.
Right.
And that to me is so far, I've been saying this all year long. I can agree that there may be an argument for him to play a bit more than he has, but it's at the margins of what really matters. What really matters for this team is the same thing that's really mattered from the day the season started. This is a team that was built on the backs of its guards. It was expected to be good because the expectation was that the guards would be one of the best groups in the country. That has not happened on a consistent basis. And because that has not been consistent, neither has the team. That, to me, you want to talk about your point guard. You want to talk about Jaden Akins not making any kind of leap that was expected to happen this year, where he turned from a good support player into a main guy. That has not happened. Tyson Walker, I think, has easily had the best season of that group. But, you know, lately, how much of this you want to ascribe to injury is debatable. When I see him go up for a windmill jam right after the horn blew tonight, I question how much that injury is really hindering him. I think it's just more that I can't say that it's not no impact because I don't know. And they're not talking about it. He's not talking about it. But I've seen guys go through shooting slumps. So it's not that unheard of. But he has not shot the ball well over the last, I don't know, half a dozen games probably.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't shot the ball well. So even with your best guard by far, he hasn't been great lately. Over the course of the season, I think he's right there with Malik for their best player, but not so much lately. And then they lose Jeremy Fears. Trey Holloman has gone through, you know, the ebbs and flows you would expect for a young player. I think he's still mostly been an overall big positive for them, but he hasn't been consistent the whole way. And then you lose Jeremy Fears right when it seemed to me that he was really starting to take off. I think his last game, he had 10 assists to one turnover in the last game he played. So, you know, you put all that together, that's the headline. And so the Booker obsession is a distraction because that stuff is largely at the margins, you know, and I get frustrated with the excuse making. So then part of the other argument is, well, if you play Booker, teams have to guard him away from the basket in a way they don't with any other center that Michigan State has. And that makes life on the guards easier. Well, the guards played with the same big men last year they did this year. And by and large, they were better. You know, and most of what I've seen go on, tonight's a prime example. Was life tough on Jaden Akins getting good shot opportunities, really? I'd argue no. He had wide open looks. Did A.J. Hogard miss point blank shots at the rim that he should convert because we've seen him do it often in his career? I would argue, yeah, that is the case. You know, so this notion that somehow that's been this huge factor, even when it comes to how inconsistent the guards have been, I just think it doesn't hold water. Mm-hmm. That's my view of it. I think those guys have gotten great shot opportunities most of the year, and all too often they haven't done with them what they should.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there. We'll be back for the Indiana game. If you want to support the show, again, head on over to our support page so you can reach out to any of our sponsors to get gutter work or get your house or clean or your windows clean or get some great Nudge printing Spartan apparel. You can also find ways to support the show financially through one-time gifts or on a recurring basis. We appreciate all the support. And of course, don't forget to leave a 5-star review on your podcast player. So until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.